Okay, good morning. So my name is John Martin, and today I'm going to be talking about water quality improvement benefits from natural and restored wetlands and riparian buffers in the agricultural landscape of the Midwest. So wetlands provide many valuable ecosystem services, and particularly water quality improvement. They are effective at filtering ground and surface water, removing nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment. Nitrogen and phosphorus are removed through the slow decomposition and subsequent burial of organic matter. Phosphorus can be absorbed onto organic matter and clay particles, while nitrogen can be returned to the atmosphere through denitrification. However, over 90% of depressional and riparian wetlands have been lost, primarily due to drainage and conversion to row crop agriculture. This has led to the increased nutrient load to freshwater and coastal systems, leading to impaired streams, hypoxia, and eutrophication. And approximately 60% of the nitrogen entering the Gulf of Mexico originates from agricultural sources. So these wetland systems are critical in local, regional, and national water quality. Yet there's hope. Through the Farm Bill, programs such as the Wetland Reserve Program and Conservation Reserve Program allow landowners to enhance, create, and restore wetlands and riparian systems in agricultural landscapes with the hope of ultimately returning some of these ecosystem services to the landscape. Since 2000, over 100,000 hectares of land have been enrolled in the WRP and CRP programs. However, no one has actually measured the delivery of these ecosystem services yet. So my research has focused on finding out if WRP and CRP systems are providing comparable levels of water quality improvement benefits relative to their natural counterparts. So our work focused here in the glaciated interior plain region, specifically in the central and northwestern portions of Indiana. Have some aerial photos here. So here we have our natural and restored riparian systems along the West Fork of the White River. Indiana is sort of limited on natural wetlands, so half of our natural wetlands were forested here along the Kankakee River in the northwest portion of the state. And a little bit to the south, we had additional natural depressional wetlands on the Willow Slough Fish and Wildlife Area. And in between the Kankakee River and Willow Slough sites, we had our WRP restored wetlands on property owned by the Nature Conservancy. All of the natural and restored wetlands were depressional systems. The wetlands here along the Kankakee River, the river has been highly levied and channelized, so there's very little river input from these systems. So our restored wetlands were all restored under the Wetland Reserve Program, the WRP program, by ceasing agriculture and filling in the surrounding drainage ditches. They are on property, as I said, owned by the Nature Conservancy, and the surrounding areas immediately adjacent to the wetlands are restored mesic prairies, which are actively managed by seeding, pesticide applications, and prescribed burns every 2 to 3 years. Our natural wetlands, we have, these were the forested wetlands along the Kankakee River and then our depressional natural sedge meadows at the Willow Slough Fish and Wildlife Area. And all of these systems are on the landscape scale surrounded by corn and soybean agriculture. So our riparian systems were along the West Fork of the White River, just north of Indianapolis. The natural riparian systems are dominated primarily by green ash, sycamore, cottonwood. And the restored riparian systems are still kind of sad looking. They're not very old yet, and they basically just stopped agriculture there and sporadically planted some bald cypress and river birch, though not very many yet. So what we did was we selected 10 WRP restored and 10 natural wetlands, 4 CRP restored riparian buffers, and 4 natural riparian buffers. And we quantified nitrogen and phosphorus removal in the top 5 centimeters using denitrification and phosphorus sorption. And then in a subset of our natural sites, we characterized sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus sequestration based on cesium-137 methods. For denitrification, we measured both ambient and potential denitrification using the acetylene inhibition method. And with each sample, we measured extractable nitrate, ammonium, and soil moisture. Phosphorus sorption, or PSI, was characterized by using a 24-hour soil incubation with a concentration of 130 milligrams of phosphorus per liter, and then measuring the change in phosphorus concentrations. We had four replicates at each site, and then, as I mentioned, we took six of our natural sites, well, four of the ones included in the denitrification and PSI, and then two additional natural sites to measure soil accretion and nutrient accumulation. We had, we had two depressional systems, two floodplain, and two riparian systems that had different hydrologic regimes. We collected 160-centimeter soil core from each site and determined accretion rates using cesium-137. And then in each sample, we measured total nitrogen using a CHN analyzer and total phosphorus using the ascorbic acid method following a nitric and perchloric acid digestion. So getting into it, did these restored systems provide comparable levels of water quality improvement benefits? Looking at phosphorus sorption first, we see that between the restored and natural riparian systems, PSI was comparable, and the units are in milligrams of P per 100 grams of soil. However, in the natural wetlands, PSI was three times higher than it was in the restored wetlands. Now, the riparian soils are pretty low in organic matter and have a higher clay content relative to the depressional wetlands, which are more in the northwest, so they're much more glaciated, so they have a higher sand content and more organic matter. So what we did was we looked at the relationship between PSI and organic carbon concentration for just the natural and restored wetlands. And organic carbon explained over 50% of the variation in PSI, respectively, and combining both natural and restored, we explained almost 70% of the variation in phosphorus sorption. We tried doing this with the riparian sites, but there was no real relationship. The clay content and organic carbon content were comparable between all of our riparian sites to the point where we found no significant relationship between organic carbon and PSI. They were correlated, but not in a fashion like this. So then looking at denitrification, we have ambient and potential denitrification rates here plotted for all of our sites in nanograms of N2O per gram of soil per hour. So the uppercase letters indicate significant differences in potential denitrification, while lowercase letters indicate significant differences in ambient denitrification. I log transformed the data prior to analysis to conform to the assumptions of ANOVA, but I plotted the raw values here. So there were two trends that we noticed across the board here. Pardon me. First was that potential denitrification was always significantly greater than ambient denitrification, indicating that these systems were either carbon-limited, nitrogen-limited, or co-limited by both. Secondly, we found that denitrification under both ambient and potential conditions was consistently higher in the riparian soils relative to the sandier and more organic wetland soils. Similar to what we found with PSI, there was no difference between ambient and potential denitrification in the restored and natural riparian buffers, while natural wetlands had higher denitrification rates relative to our restored wetlands. So we have a correlation matrix here between ambient denitrification and extractable nitrate, ammonium, and soil moisture for both wetland and riparian soils. And focusing here just on the denitrification column, we see that soil moisture was the strongest correlation, had the strongest correlation with denitrification in both systems. The values in yellow indicate significant correlations, and as you can see, just about everything is significantly correlated here. So using our bulk density and sampling depth measurements, we were able to loosely scale these values up to the landscape level, and we found that under ambient conditions, wetlands and riparians were removing between 30 and 150 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per year. However, under potential conditions, these values increased to between 1 and 500 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per year. So looking at our cesium profiles between our depressional, floodplain, and riparian systems, we find that the accretion rates follow the pattern of hydrology, with the lowest rates being in the depressional systems, which get lower deliveries of both water and sediment, with accretion rates of about 0.65 millimeters per year. Under the riparian systems, which have a much more pulsed hydrology, the accretion rates increase to between 1 and 3.3 millimeters per year, and you can see that the floodplain systems were kind of in between both the depressional and riparian systems. So using our total nitrogen phosphorus measurements, we see that the nitrogen accumulation, the phosphorus accumulation, and the mineral sediment accumulation follow the same patterns as the accretion rates, with across the board being lowest in the depressional systems, greatest in the riparian systems, and then with the more minimally pulsed floodplain systems being in between the two. We also measured carbon sequestration, which really isn't the focus of this talk, but I thought that I would include that since I knew that a lot of people were interested in carbon sequestration. And again, the same trend with about 20 to 30 grams of carbon per meter squared per year in our depressional systems and up to about 120 grams of carbon per meter squared per year in our riparian systems. So overall, denitrification was in fact greater in the riparian buffers relative to our depressional wetlands. The phosphorus sorption was greater in mineral sediments with higher clay content relative to our sandier and organic wetland soils. However, in the restored wetlands, the ability of these soils to remove phosphorus was dependent upon the ability to accumulate organic matter. Overall, nitrogen and phosphorus sequestration was greater in the mineral soils with a pulsed hydrology, being the riparian systems. So ultimately, yes, WRP and CRP sites are in fact providing water quality improvement benefits. However, riparian wetlands are removing more sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus from the landscape. The delivery of these services is dependent upon parent material, hydrology, and the disturbance regime. The finer textured clay riparian soils removed more nitrogen through denitrification, removed more phosphorus through phosphorus sorption, and sequestered more nitrogen and phosphorus through burial relative to the more coarse textured and organic matter based depressional wetland soils. Similarly, all of these functions follow the pattern of hydrology, with the depressional precipitation fed wetlands having the lowest rates of sequestration and removal, while the pulsed riparian systems had the greatest rates of sequestration and removal. And then also the disturbance regime played a big role. The restored prairies surrounding our restored wetlands, which are continually burned, the sandier wetland soils allows them to actually drain out toward the end of the summer. So as they use these prescribed burns, those actually do pass through the wetlands, oxidizing a lot of the organic matter, thereby slowing and minimizing the ability of these soils to remove phosphorus. So our research was funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we thank the Indiana DNR, the Nature Conservancy, and the Hamilton County Parks and Recreation for access to their site. And here are some of my lab mates helping me collect some soil cores in the field. So thank you for your time, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Mm-hmm. But you have all these systems are also depressional wetlands that presumably weren't really connected to high nitrate sources. So why do you think nitrification was so very high?
I hadn't even looked at it like that because we were looking at, we just finished the accumulation and sequestration data, and we up to this point had just been looking at denitrification between the depressional and riparian systems, and since it was so much lower than the riparian systems, we weren't thinking of it as being that much greater than what the analysis that we had just finished. So honestly, I haven't even gotten that far yet in trying to determine why those rates were so much higher than the sequestration rates. But thank you. That's something I'll definitely look into.
Yeah. So I was originally
little confused. You were measuring the denitrification enzyme assay.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Were you calling that denitrification, or did you also measure potential denitrification by just adding, maybe adding a whole bunch of nitrate?
Yeah, so we did the acetylene inhibition with just chlorum, phenacol, and acetylene, and then we also added, we repeated those measurements adding glucose and potassium nitrate to remove the carbon and nitrogen limitations. So it was the enzyme assay under, with and without removing the limitations.
Okay, so that makes sense in that since that's a sort of a spot measurement at that moment in time, the riparian systems are likely to have access to nitrate, so their enzyme activity would be higher than the depression of wetland may not be connected.
Okay, yeah.
So that, you know, that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you know what methods was used to restore these wetlands? Because I've worked on a SEEK project in Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, and they used a lot of heavy machinery to bring the water table back to the surface.
Yeah, in the restored wetlands, they just went around filling in the ditches. And then pretty much, I think they only had to grade maybe one or two of the actual wetlands, and the rest was just, I think they started with fire, and then they did a lot of active seeding, and they do a lot of pesticide spraying and things like that. But there wasn't as much machinery involved in the wetland restoration. And then in the riparian sites, they just stopped growing corn 1 year. I mean, aside from, I mean, there was only standing water. We had, the past couple years were a little drier, so there wasn't always a lot of water there. I mean, there was some standing water after rains, but the wetlands were relatively sandy, so they drained pretty quickly.